Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to the First Film Club. I'm Natalie Louise.
And I'm Hannah Flint.
And this is a podcast series dedicated to established and emerging talent from the film industry and the first feature that launched their careers. We started the First Film Club back in 2018 as a Q&A event series. We've been able to hear from some of the most celebrated directors as they reflect on their feature film debuts in cinemas across London. Now Hannah and I are excited to expand the format to include talent both in front of and behind the camera. Each episode is dedicated to a film, a guest, and their behind-the-scenes stories, memories, and advice from their time on set. Hannah will set the scene.
Fran Kranz has spent the last 20 years working as an actor across film, TV, and stage. You might remember him from his role as Topher Brink in sci-fi series Dollhouse, or as the final guy Marty in 2011 horror comedy The Cabin in the Woods. Now, the American actor has decided to get behind the camera to write, produce and direct his very first feature film.
Can you come help me set up?
What do we need to set up?
The room for the meeting.
I don't know if I can do it.
Richard, Linda, this is Jay and Gail Perry.
What would you like to know?
Everything. I want to know everything.
Why?
Why do I want to know about your son? Because he killed mine.
I know what happened.
No, you do not know how my son died. You do not know. I know.
Mass is a poignant drama about a pair of grieving parents who sit down to discuss the mass shooting they lost both their sons to. With the bulk of the film taking place in one room, there's a theatre-like feel to the performances, so it's no wonder he casts some of the best stage actors around. Reed Birney and Anne Dowd play one couple, while Jason Isaacs and Martha Plimpton play the other in this tense examination of grief, pain and anger associated with one of the most horrific subjects that continues to cast a shadow over American society. Here I talk to Fran about making this his directorial debut.
I like your DVD collection. Is that?
I kind of color coded it, which means I can't find anything.
Tell if they were all like, you know, Disney movies or children's or so. Well, now I can read a couple of them.
Here's my ultimate collection of American Gigolo, Ghost, and Officer and Gentleman. So
how do those fit together?
And maybe they're owned by the same studio. They were like, let's just do a 3-for-1.
Yeah, I'm not sure I get the connection, but yeah, all right, cool.
I'm really excited because you're the first interview for this podcast.
Amazing.
I'm very excited.
Oh, I'm honored. Amazing. Yeah, great.
Well, I saw Mass actually earlier this year at Sundance, I believe it was.
Yeah.
It premiered and
no.
Just amazing. And for a first time feature, it seems like an interesting choice. But also a kind of the way it's shot actually might have been a quite simple choice as well. There's lots of factors that went into it. So I suppose first off, I'd really just love to know, like, what did you have to really go through to get this made? Obviously, you've got a massive career as an actor on stage or screen, but for you to actually get financing and tell this specific story, that's quite a poignant story that could go off kilter or go left field. But, you know, how did you get people to invest in this idea?
Gosh, it's such a good question. I mean, it's really pretty depressing story. I mean, getting it made, not necessarily the film. I would joke, like sending someone your screenplay is like asking them to never speak to you again. Like as an actor, sort of like no one really wanted to read it, you know, sort of you're an actor, just please stay an actor. I don't want to read your screenplay because if it's terrible, then we have to talk about it. And you get that feeling where I had a lot of people just not even respond. But of course, some people did read it, right? And some people really believed in it. I was constantly told you can't just stay in the room, though. You know, that was the major note, was you have to mix it up. You have to have flashbacks. You got to break this up. But I was adamant about the idea that this is going to be a real time conversation. I really believe strongly in that for reasons we can get into later. But the sort of the next stage was, when the script was in a good place and I was really determined to make the film, because for a moment I thought maybe this should be a play, but my heart was set on a movie. And I do believe it is cinematic, and that there's so many layers and dynamics to the conversation. I needed the camera and lenses and the close-ups and all the different coverage in order to be able to capture that. But I basically wrote down a long list of people I knew that might have money. and I sort of cold called and emailed all these people, and it was just brutal. And a lot of people, very polite, but just no one wanted to go near it. And I was so determined at that point. I'd felt, you know, so emotionally invested in making this story. The writing process was just like crying in front of a laptop, you know. So I was, you know, I honestly felt like I had to make it, like my life depended on it. So I just created an LLC online and opened a checking account. I had a friend who had wrote and directed a movie, and she told me, and this might be bad advice, but it sort of works, that she just said, if you have a dollar, you're partially financed. You know, so I put some money into an account, and I started telling people, yeah, we have some financing. And then the sort of the trinity of things that really started getting agents to pay attention was a date and a location and a casting director, because I was still that actor sending people my screenplay and no one kind of wants to go near that. So I got hired casting directors to be representatives of it. And then found the church in Idaho, and this is a ski town, a ski resort town. So come Thanksgiving Day in the States, the prices and the hotels just skyrocketed. So I was essentially able to say early November, Idaho, and here are the casting directors. And within a week or two, I started getting emails with lists with names on it, like Martha Plimpton and who, you know, actors available. And then I had an agency, my own agency, reach out and say, would you like to meet Jason Isaacs? And it was insane. I mean, because it went from 0 to 60 in just a matter of, you know, a week or two from having, you know, struggling to have anyone pay attention to it at all. It was sort of all of a sudden a kind of a go project with sort of namey actors, and you know, it was sort of miraculous. But that we still only had like $30,000 in a bank account. So then but at that point you had a cast, and so people were much more interested in financing the film.
It's interesting, like someone like M. Night Shyamalan, who obviously, you know, he's did a load of films and got financing, but after that point where no one would finance his film, so he like remortgaged his house. Like that, and now he only ever finances his own films, and he's doing quite well from it. Did you want to put any of your own money in, apart from that, like dollar to open?
Oh, there was a point. No. Yeah, for sure. There became. Well, we only had enough money to shoot it, so we were an ultra low budget movie. But we just kind of we were done. You know, we spent all our money. In fact, we were in debt to our payroll company by the time we finished shooting. And at that point, you know, I believed in it. So I said, this is mine. At that point, I didn't want anyone else's money, because I really believed I saw what I saw on set. We had a 2.5-day rehearsal, which was essential because we had no time to shoot it. The conversation, when the door closes, Michelle Carter, who plays Kendra, the mediator, closes the door. It's about a 75-minute conversation. And we shot that in 8 days. And I knew I had the performances. So I had kind of the confidence and the faith that, you know, this is going to work. And there, not to say there weren't times later down the road in the editing room where I was like, oh my God, yeah, I'm going to lose all my money.
It's really one room.
Yeah. But yeah, you know, I was just speaking about this. We shot in November, 2019. We never would have been able to afford this during the pandemic because we had so little money anyway, the testing and all everything that's now come with shooting during COVID. But we were lucky enough to get a rough cut done in February 2020 and had a screening for about 50, 60 people. And I was so nervous that it was going to be the most boring movie ever, that ever made, right? Because I'd only worked with my editor, Yang Wahu, and it was the two of us in a room. And we thought we had it, you know, but I wasn't sure. So when that screening happened, my biggest fear was the conversation being boring. And it was the you know, it wasn't even a problem. You know, everyone was very emotional and you just knew we had it. So that was huge. And then, you know, the world shut down 2 weeks later. So without that screening, I'm not sure where my head would have been around the movie, you know?
So I suppose you want to have a sounding board of like, okay, is this the right way when you do your script and stuff? And obviously, you might have sent it to actors, but also you probably worked with a ton of filmmakers as well. You want their advice. So is there anyone you sent it to get feedback on as you were doing it? Like, I suppose, just not to name drop, I spoke to Halle Berry recently about Bruce, her first feature, and she was like, oh, I sent it to Spike Lee. So I'm like, who's your Spike Lee, Fran?
I wish I could send it to Spike Lee. You know, it's funny. You know, he might not be as well known, although he does a lot of work out here. Richard Nelson, who's a playwright and director, and he works a lot at the Public Theater in New York City. And he's brilliant. And he puts on these plays that are very lifelike, just very realistic. And you'll have people sitting around a table eating dinner. So, and they'll eat real food on stage. Their backs are to the audience. So an entire scene, you know, you're just staring at someone's back, having food. They speak at a volume to the which they really speak to the person next to them. They're not projecting to the audience. There's nothing presentational about it. So it's just life on stage. And I wanted that, I kind of wanted to find that experience on film for this movie. You know, he was sort of a big influence on me stylistically or aesthetically, right? So you wanted to believe you were just there at the table watching real life. You know what I mean? That it had to feel so real and natural. So I got a lot of good notes from him. He's thanked in the credits because I felt like he had such a good eye for this sort of this verisimilitude that I was trying to achieve, right? And he had a wonderful sort of thought observation on an early draft saying, you know, it's very polite. I'm not sure if that's a criticism, but they're very polite. And so much of my inspiration were the Truth and Reconciliation Commission amnesty hearings in South Africa. And there was, at least what I witnessed I can see on film and transcripts I've read, there was a good deal of, was politeness a word, but decorum and formality. But those were hearings, right? Those were sort of these government sanctioned hearings. So it's different than a private meeting. And eventually I kind of pushed back initially saying, no, I think these meetings are polite. They're not the normal catharsis or dramatic arc of in a movie. And I'm not trying to do that. I want to do something else. But I think eventually I started to realize, or as I did more research and got to know more and more about people and families and survivors and children that were lost and teachers that were lost, it just became so emotional writing this thing that I found I reached a sort of new place in speaking about grief and loss. And there's a scene with Gail, Martha Plimpton's character, has a very emotional scene and speeches, series of speeches towards the end of the film. And that was always essentially in there, but it was sort of polite and just sort of spoken. Whereas there was a point in the writing process where I sort of had read something and learned something about a really painful, you know, one of these events in our country, and the Newtown, Sandy Hook, you know, with these such young children. And I sort of, something else kind of came out of me and sort of rewriting that speech and that scene. And it kind of just dug deeper, just kind of got to a deeper level of emotion and grief. And it changed. I think it changed the whole complexion of the story. And I thought back like, oh, I think that's what Richard meant, that it was polite, that I hadn't dug deep enough and felt the sort of bottom of all this, you know. And then, and I felt like I kind of really got there at this last stage, kind of one of the late stages of the writing process, when I kind of revised that scene with Gail, and it just became so much more emotional.
I want to know what changed. When he was 13, he started going online. He started that gaming profile, that account.
They weren't violent games then.
Yeah, I know that, but...
They were fantasy games, like role play.
Yeah, I know that, but it was still the same account that he used later on, so... I'm just asking what changed.
That's very hard to answer.
Well, please try.
It's not just one thing.
Then tell me more than one thing.
Hey, Gail, let's not do it like this, okay?
Okay. You're right. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
We're not interrogating.
Then what are you doing? I say that as compassionately as I can. What are we doing? You say you want to heal. We all do. Is this how?
How long has this idea been marinating for you before you actually put pen to paper? Why, you know, because I don't think this subject is really, I mean, there's a Vox Lux maybe. I mean, we need to talk about Kevin. There's not really that much that, especially from this angle. So like, yeah, how did this kind of come about?
Yeah, I've seen those movies in Elephant and trying to think. I mean, I think there's sort of a few. I mean, the real catalyst was the Parkland shooting. I mean, that's when I really got overwhelmed by it, because I was a parent then, a new parent, just a 1.5-year-old. And I thought, this is insane and I need to know what the hell is going on. It wasn't a movie, but I started reading books and became obsessed with the subject matter. But I do think, because I learned about the Truth and Reconciliation Commission in college. I mean, it was after it happened, but I really sort of started reading these hearings, and it was in relation to a project in school. And I was amazed and inspired. Of course, it's an inspiring idea. And a lot of inspiring stories, but it was also, it scared the shit out of me. It was so upsetting too, because I thought I couldn't do it. I didn't think I could forgive. I didn't think I could participate in it. I felt deep down I wouldn't want to. I just want to punish someone. I just want retribution. And it's a scary thing to sort of wrestle with, because you also know, I don't know how much solace that provides. I don't know what putting, you know, getting to someone else to suffer, you know, how much does it really help you? Does hate just poison you? I was always really interested in the feelings that came up in me were so sort of disturbing and complicated that it was something I felt like I was always trying to figure out what to do with it. And when I came across these private meetings between parents in the wake of shootings in our country, I thought, my God, that's it. That's the connection. That's it. There's this documentary, Long Night's Journey in Today, and I'd seen it several times, about the 4 amnesty hearings in South Africa. And then, of course, I'm just a huge fan of Desmond Tutu's book, No Future Without Forgiveness, and his sort of speaking about the designing and the sort of the process of the TRC in South Africa. And it just all kind of clicked. It just was, I just realized this is it. This is, there's something that's been bothering me, and this is it. This is the story. So I got to write this out. I got to figure out how people get from point A to point B, and working through pain in the most unimaginable, terrible circumstances I could think of.
Yeah.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I'm Helen O'Hara, film journalist, author, and host of Women vs. Hollywood, a new podcast from the Stripped Media family. We're exploring the fall and rise of women in Hollywood, from the silent era to the present day and into the future. Each episode, I'm joined by three or more special guests to discuss the challenges that women face in the film industry and look at what we can do to change the picture. We've got actors, directors, producers, writers, academics, film experts, you name it, they're all here to explain what's going on in Hollywood. Search for Women vs. Hollywood now, wherever you're listening to this, and come join us.
I feel like this is like a real actor's film in a sense that everyone's got their time in the sun and your cast are just like...
They're so amazing.
Insane. So yeah. I suppose, tell me about that casting process. Like, you know, did you have people in like mind that you wanted to speak to?
Yeah, I did. You know, I never in a million years thought I'd get people this well-known. And I mean, they're as good as it gets, truly. I really believe that. I mean, there's so many talented people out there. But, you know, like, I don't think you sort of break out of this ceiling that these four are at. You know what I mean? I just think, you know, you get like movie stars and, you know, people just have a better look or, you know, but for the most part, like this is as good as it gets. I wrote it for Reed Birney because I knew him from New York theater. And I imagined, okay, I'm going to make this like tiny, ultra low budget movie. No one's going to want to do it. So I'm going to have to get favors from friends that I know through the theater community. I believed I needed theater actors, and maybe it was because it was a play. I was writing it as a play for a few months. It was the first drafts were screenplays, but there was a period of, you know, 4 or 5 months where it was a play, or maybe even more. So I had these sort of people in mind. And truthfully, I mean, Reed was available when the time came to make a movie, sort of summer of 2019. You know, he was available. He had said he's done with the theater. So he wanted to make a movie. But it was funny, some of the other people that I'd sort of had do a table read and kind of in mind, you know, they were busy and they were doing shows and, you know, I was offering nothing and no one knew if I could make a movie well. And so I kind of had to go back to square one. But all of a sudden, when I, like I said, put those pieces together in development, all of a sudden I had agencies saying, you know, these are my available clients, you know, whoever you're interested in, maybe they'll write the script and then you can meet. And it was, you know, I saw names like Martha Plimpton and I thought, oh my God, you know, Martha Plimpton, I've thought was just amazing since I was a kid. And
Parenthood was the first film I saw her, and I love
Parenthood.
That.
Yeah. So, no, you know, it's funny. The thing that I know, Parenthood's amazing. We were talking about that last night. don't mention the Goonies. She doesn't need to go there. But she, I for some reason running on empty because I just remember this really emotional scene between her and River Phoenix, but she doesn't. She holds it in. She doesn't want to cry. It's like this contained emotional scene, which I thought seemed so intelligent, you know, because there's this great, Kazan has a great quote about men don't cry, actors do. And it felt like at this young age, this woman or girl, I don't know how old she was, she sort of understood all that, the complexity of that human beings don't, they don't want to show emotions. You sort of guard yourself. And so she had this kind of quiet, contained, just sort of anger and frustration inside of her. And honestly, the face, and as I saw Martha's name on this list, and I thought of that moment and that everything she's holding inside. And I could, that was it. I was like, oh my God, Gail, that's it. And so that I couldn't, I mean, it's amazing. They're, not only are they so good, I truly can't think of, you give me the every actor in the world, and I couldn't think of anyone better at the in these roles. You know what I mean? They just embodied them and did such incredible work on this movie. Because I couldn't, it wouldn't work without a cast. And that was, I remember in early October, even a month or so before we were going, we still didn't have Linda. We didn't have an Ann Dowd or a Linda. And I was saying, and sort of internally to producers, and, you know, I can't do this. I have to pull the plug if we don't get a Linda that I think can really go there. And it's a, you know, hard, hard role, of course, and very emotional. And I thought, you know, we have to, even though we were several thousand dollars in, tens of thousands of dollars in to equipment and location and all these things, that it's, I just thought, you know what, I don't know, it's not worth it. It's not worth it. We'll have to just deal with the money loss. But the cast was the one thing that would sort of make or break it. So I lucked out, and, you know, Anne sort of came on at the last second. Her name was on a list, and I thought, oh my God, you know, let's go for it. So
always got to go with Anne Dowd.
I mean,
it'd be rude not to.
I know, she's just out of, she's out of this world. Yeah.
So now you've got like this first film, it's done. It's done. It's finished, complete. What's your biggest takeaway from that experience that you can now bring on to your next one?
I mean, I want to make another movie just to sort of improve on mistakes. You just, there's so often, there's all these crises, you know, in making a movie. And I look back and I think, you know, that one actually wasn't really a crisis. You know, it's just the stress of movie making and maybe being a first time movie, you know, filmmaker. There's so much that I didn't understand about the length of the process. You know, it takes time. But I mean, I mean, more so, you know, for me, I couldn't have done this if I didn't believe there was hope to it. And, you know, I feel like I say this a lot now, and I'm not trying to sort of defend or sell the movie. I truly believe it. I believe the movie's about change, and that you can work through pain and grief, and that people can work through their differences, and reconciliation is possible. And we live in a world where I believe we need it. And I have so much anxiety about the country my daughter's going to grow up into and how divided we are. And so I truly believe in like what the characters are doing on a universal level, nothing to do with school shootings, just in the sense that people can work through their differences and their disagreements and sort of find some peace through kind of human connection. And I believe in this message. And I want to be a representative of that. And so that's the sort of takeaways. I know it's emotional. I know it's really challenging. It was meant to be. It was designed to be an endurance test and hard. But I just don't want people to think, oh, you know, what a sad movie about a terribly sad subject. I just don't see it that way. I couldn't have made it if that's all it was. You know what I mean? I couldn't have gone through all of this and spent the money and cried in front of the laptop. I couldn't, if I didn't believe it was, if it was a positive movie about hope and change. Yeah. You know,
I think you did it. I felt hopeful. I did cry a lot, but I felt hopeful by the end.
So yeah. Thank you. No, I think people that see it seem to, it's just, I feel like now it has this perception or sort of reputation of like, oh, you don't want to go there.
Well, welcome to filmmaking, having your art scrutinized in a whole different way.
That's all been a lot of fun.
Well, well, thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure talking to you.
Yeah, thanks, Hannah. Thank you.
That was writer-director Fran Kranz. And Mass is available to watch via Sky Cinema and Now. Next time on the First Film Club, we're joined by producer Hester Ruoff, whose debut feature, Boiling Point, was shot in a race against time as the world was going into lockdown. Thank you for listening to the First Film Club podcast. Please like, subscribe, share, and follow us on Twitter and Instagram at @first_filmclub to keep up with the show and hear about our latest film screening events. This is a Stripped Media podcast series written, produced, and hosted by Hannah Flint and Natalie Louise. Edited by Ben Williams, with music composed by The Last Skeptic.
You just heard a Stripped Media production.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.